When I started, we had a situation where within about a month or two, we were regarded as having the worst performing currency of any country. 6 months later, we are judged to have the best performing currency of any country.
It is my great pleasure to introduce Yemi Cardoso, governor of the Central Bank of Nigeria, who before taking his current appointment about 6 months ago, I think almost exactly, had a long and distinguished career in both private banking and the public sector.
Nigeria's new administration under President Tinubu, elected last September, has been working hard to stabilize its plummeting currency and regain market confidence. But while restoring macroeconomic stability requires bold reforms, Governor Cardoso says one must never lose sight of the objectives.
Whatever policies you make, if they don't impact the man on the street, then you've not done anything.
In this program, Governor Yemi Cardoso sits down with Ebebe Amro Selassie, director of the IMF African Department, to discuss what it means to head Nigeria's central bank.
To put it mildly, it has been a period of much challenge and hugely important reforms in the monetary area in Nigeria. So, Governor, you inherited tightly managed and, to put it mildly again, overvalued exchange rates, and have taken some really bold policy decisions to end the system of multiple fixed exchange rates that you had. If I could ask how you approached the sequencing of reforms, what issues gave you most cause for concern, and you know how you went about mitigating the risks?
Thank you very much. That's quite a jam-packed question there. I will try and unpack it as best as I can. I think in terms of context, it's clear that for those who don't know, that I came in at a time of very, very great difficulty for the central bank and the monetary authorities. Inflation was high and the exchange rate was under tremendous stress. And there was a crisis of confidence. And in such a situation, the biggest challenge, as far as I can see, was that of trust and the deficit in trust. People simply had the impression that things were bad. There was fear, and somehow they didn't see any end in sight to what seemed like a very gloomy situation. So it was very important to understand that and, in terms of sequencing, do whatever it was possible, take the necessary steps to begin the process of building back trust. Now, that is not something that happens overnight. And I recall that when I went for the Senate hearings, one of the things I said at the time was that I recognized the fact that there was a huge backlog of about $7 billion in forward transactions which had not been met and which seemed to provide a lot of apprehension to Nigerians. And I made a commitment to take care of them. How I was going to do that, I didn't know. But I thought it was very important to make that commitment there in order to build back the trust deficit that one was going into. And also, I had to reach out to various stakeholders, particularly the international investors. And in actual fact, the first day I started at the bank, one of the first groups I dealt with were the international investors, because they had been following activities and they were very keen to know what was going on. And I felt it was very important to continue to have that dialogue, okay, which I did. and use that as an opportunity, as I said, to rebuild trust with people and with various stakeholders. And then, of course, the next thing in terms of sequencing was to make it abundantly clear that the era of interventions, which really hadn't taken us anywhere, were over. And that I intended to go back to orthodox monetary policy. So I think those were very, very important things to make very clear. And I think that helped, obviously, to set the stage for what came after. It was very important to continue to reemphasize those things in the process of building trust. Of course, communication was also very key, and it has to also be sequenced. And I know that at the outset, there was concern that one was not saying enough, but there was a strategy to that, because I felt it was important to, at the outset, come out and say things you needed to say when you needed to say them. And I recall that at a particular forum, which was the Chartered Institute of Bankers, which is held on a yearly basis, I used that opportunity to communicate very strongly. I made sure I got everything, including giving forward guidance with respect to the banking sector, and to let people know that we were going to have a recapitalization exercise. This was in November, and the guidelines didn't come out till just recently. So they had plenty of time to start thinking that through. So these are some of the sequences that we went through. In terms of what kept me, some of the issues that, you know, one was concerned about and how did I approach them and all that, there was a lot of worry with respect to the excess money supply, you know, and one had to take bold measures with respect to mopping up liquidity and then subsequently, of course, hiking interest rates. And I know that the first monetary policy committee meeting we had, I did a 400 basis point increase, which was unprecedented. Mm-hmm. But we had to do it. We had to do it. We had no choice. And we followed that up with another 200 basis points. And we had to do that also, because to the extent that we'd committed to price stability, we were convinced that we had to do whatever was necessary to ensure that prices and inflation was, the right steps were put in place to ensure that we got there. Now, it's, in saying all this, it's also important to recognize, and I say this all the time, that whatever policies you make, if they don't impact the man on the street, then you've not done anything.
Absolutely. So I have a question on that, which is, you know, you've emphasized how important communication was, particularly bankers and other stakeholders, but exactly this point on how to influence expectations. Essentially, what you've embarked on is a shift towards an inflation targeting regime, you know, at least in the, you know, you're moving in that direction. And what you're losing in a way is like the exchange rate being used as a nominal anchor, as one of the big inputs in terms of setting expectations. How is it that you're communicating with people on the streets? How is it that you're expecting and hoping to influence behavior and price setting activity?
Sure. It's a very good question. And I think the answer to that is that one is also reasonable in expectations, knowing fully well that all these things will not transform overnight. In actual fact, when we look at the situation of Nigeria, a lot of the problems that have happened there in terms of the monetary side have taken place over a long period of time. And I think continuous dialogue and communication is essential in letting people understand why we're doing certain things, where we're trying to get to, and continuously going back to reemphasize what we've done. And we will continue to do so. And in actual fact, we will strengthen We will strengthen the communication mechanisms that we have in place. We will certainly not take it for granted that people understand what it is we're doing and why we're doing that, because it is quite a complex subject, to be perfectly honest, that even for those who are the most enlightened, they sometimes struggle. So to that extent, we will do everything possible to use different platforms, as the case may be, to ensure that we can reach out to as many as possible. I do think that what we've seen recently with regards to the exchange rate, okay, helps to give people hope, in the sense that when I started, we had a situation where within about a month or two, we were regarded as having the worst performing currency of any country. 6 months later, we are judged to have the best performing currency of any country. So I think those things speak for themselves. A situation where in the recent past, the greatest amount of liquidity on a daily basis was in the region of 200-300 million US, to a situation where over the course of the past 6 months, we've traded up to $1 billion.
This is FX liquidity.
Yes. So the FX liquidity has certainly, you know, taken a center stage, quite frankly, in the activities of the monetary side. And I think people see that. They see the exchange rate coming down. They understand that, or we continue to talk about the fact that the pass-through, there's a lag. But ultimately, the objective is to ensure we can moderate inflation.
Of course, in the background to the conduct of monetary policy is the fairly sizable fiscal deficit that the government runs, the federal government runs. And the financing of that deficit has been one of the sources of pressure for looser monetary policy. How is it that you're coordinating with the minister, your counterpart, Wale, in how are you calibrating policies? Have you started coordinating better? And how is it that you expect the federal government will fund itself on a sustainable basis?
Yes. And another very good question, and a question that comes up quite regularly. And of course, first and foremost, let me be upfront in saying that the monetary policy is just one side of it, no question about that. And with the whole inflation targeting objective, which you spoke about earlier, we can't do it without successfully collaborating with the fiscal side. It simply will not work. So it's clear to us that we need to have a very good handshake with the fiscal side, and a handshake that takes us in the direction that we want to go to. We understand, of course, that, again, breaking that down, that the food inflation, perhaps, we can use that as a good example. Food inflation is something that is not within the purview of the monetary side, but we definitely work together and rub minds together, and recently, we had some fertilizers which had come out from the previous administration, okay, and we, you know, pushed that over to the Ministry of Agriculture to help them, okay, going into the next planting season with respect to meeting their overall objectives. In the MPC, we have the presence of very, very senior leadership from the fiscal side as a member of the Monetary Policy Committee in the person of the Permanent Secretary of the Ministry of Finance. And we always have very good and open dialogue on issues, so we're able to hear the different sides of the situation. And indeed, beyond that, we've set up different committees that work hand in hand with respect to ensuring that we are on the same page with respect to taming inflation. Now, I think it is also commendable that the Ministry of Finance have themselves begun that process of reducing the outstanding, you know, monetizing the outstanding securitize, and I beg your pardon, the outstanding ways and means. And I think that is extremely commendable. And I think we're really, it's less of an issue now, so we can work better together, bearing in mind, as I said, that as we move to inflation targeting, it's going to have to be a very strong partnership for it to be successful.
It strikes me that you really have achieved quite a bit over the last 6 months in office. You highlighted the overshoot and then now correction, the exchange rate. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, stepping back a little bit, you know, as a policymaker wearing this hat, this playing this very important role, what are one or two key lessons that you take away from, you know, your first 6 months in office?
I cannot overemphasize the importance of trust. I cannot overemphasize it. And to be honest, when I look back on it, irrespective of the courage, the boldness to do certain things, and the understanding of issues that many may not understand by virtue of the fact that you have access to data and other things, if the trust isn't there, you will suboptimize. So it's clear to me that trust is so critical in successfully anchoring a major, major task like this. Trust is very, very, very important. And then in terms of lessons also, I think so a bit surprising, quite frankly, that perhaps one had expected that there was a greater understanding of a lot of the issues. Complex though they are, one expected there was a greater understanding. And then another lesson is the fact that one found, and again, communication is very important in this, that expectations of people of the central bank, in my view, were, you know, totally misplaced. People expected you could wave a wand and that would be the end of the problems. And in fact, in many cases, blamed you for the woes that you had nothing to do with, other than the fact that you were there to try and, you know, find solutions. And on one or two occasions, I actually had to remind people that, listen, I didn't do this. I am part of the solution. So please, let's roll up our sleeves and work together to ensure that we can, you know, surmount them, rather than, you know, at some point in time, pretty hostile reactions.
If I could have a quick follow-up. I mean, like, you've emphasized the importance of credibility, trust, but how much was that garnered by doing the policies that you did? Or was it something that, you know, is it just your words that you think allowed you to build that trust and confidence?
Yes, I think consistency in saying certain things, okay, and then doing them, I think, was very important. And again, I think we have a situation today where Nigerians are very restless and people were very impatient. They wanted results very quickly. But you had to come out and explain why it couldn't happen overnight. You had to be honest about it. And even with the policies that you put out, where certain things needed to be tweaked, you needed to have the humility to tweak them.
Governor Cardoso, Yemi, thank you so, so much for sharing your experience, the lessons that you've learned. It's certainly salutary and really important for many other countries also. Thank you so much, Governor.
Thank you, Governor. Take care.
Was Governor of the Central Bank of Nigeria, Yemi Cardoso, speaking with IMF Africa Department Head, Abebe Amro Selassie. The event took place as part of the Governor Talks series during the spring meetings in April. You can watch a webcast of the event at imf.org. And look for more of these IMF podcasts wherever you listen. You can also follow us on X, what used to be Twitter, at IMF_podcast. I'm Bruce Edwards. Thanks for listening.